Welcome to the program today. This is Forgotten Word Ministries. Today we're going to study the parable of the swords and the foes based on Matthew 10:32-38, which reads, "Therefore everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is also in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be the members of his household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." Now let's learn a little bit about what that parable, that those scriptures actually mean. I'm going to read a little here from a book called All the Parables of the Bible by Herbert Lockyer. And let me read what Herbert wrote about this. It's a short little thing here. He called it the Parable of Swords and Foes. He says, "While the unashamed confession of Christ is a great duty of all he calls to follow and serve him, he here reminds us that such confession is still necessary even though it proves disturbing. We here light upon one of those hard and apparently contradictory sayings of our Lord. Was not his birth heralded as bringing peace on earth? Did he not say, 'In me, peace,' and is he not our peace? Is he not portrayed as the Prince of Peace? Yes, all this is true, but it likewise is true that he cannot give his great heavenly peace till he has disturbed our low and at times our false earthly peace." This seeming paradox was intended to prepare the disciples for the strife and division their true witness would entail. Was it not revealed to the mother of our Lord that a sword would pass through her own soul also? That was in Luke 2:35. Now he illustrates the effect his work and witness, and also that of his children, would produce. The figure of the sword meant that his cause would be division, even to the breaking up of households. But that amid all separations, his own must be loyal to him, because his truth would be contrary to all the impulses of the human soul, inevitably divisions would arise. There would come deadly opposition between eternally hostile principles, penetrating into and rending asunder dearest ties. He who alone can fashion true households yet wields a sword and divides households. But when Jesus spoke of foes of one's own household, had he in mind his own brothers according to the flesh who had not yet believed in him? For this we do know, that the treason of Judas against Jesus was an extension of the psalmist's complaint, Psalm 41:9, 55:12-14, and see also Micah 7:6 and John 13:11. All those refer to that. Again, that's Psalm 41:9, 55:12-14, Micah 7:6, and John 13:18. Now, often in a home there arises a necessity of a choice between Christ and the nearest relations. This is the severe test a Jew and Roman Catholic often has to face when stepping out for Christ. Such obedience to the higher supernatural calling, no matter what cost is involved, constitutes the cross to which Jesus referred. The disciples knew what it was for their master to take up his cross, and they came to experience what it was to endure ignominy, suffering, and death for his dear sake. Our cross is not the daily burdens or irritations that come upon us, but a preparedness to go forth even to crucifixion, the pith of our Lord's paradoxical maxim about losing life to find it is summed up for us in the couplet, "The life of self is death, the death of self is life." Again, that's "The life of self is death, the death of self is life." All those who pass the sentence of death on themselves or who accept Christ at whatever cost are assured that the reward of such discipleship is great. There's a reward of the dignity of ambassadorship, We will witness before and the promise and the prospect of a glorious reward when Jesus appears to judge every man's service of what sort it is. That's from Herman Locke years, All the Parables of the Bible. Excellent book. I believe that was published back in the, I think, the 60s. But let me see. I thought 60-some. 63, 1963. Excellent book. As we read that, some things were very interesting to me. In today's world, all we hear anymore, or it seems like all we hear, is just peace, 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 love, love, love. That's all you need. It reminds me of the old Beatles song, John Lennon, "All You Need Is Love, All You Need Is Love." And if you have love, everything is going to work out perfect. And so what's going on, it seems like, is everyone's really on this big kick right now about, let's just love each other. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter who you call God. They're saying now that, Muhammad and Jesus, even though they're different religions, actually truly are following the one true God. Now, we know that's not true, but they're trying to make everybody believe that because they're trying to sell us on this idea in the world today that all we need to do is love each other. And, if you have the love of Christ, you'll exude that love, you'll live that love, and you'll understand it. People will understand it from you. But you can't put Christ in the background and bring everything else that fits man's wants and wishes to the forefront and be right. Because as we've learned here, very simply, to truly follow Christ, to truly believe what Jesus taught, and to live what Jesus taught is certainly not going to be easy. It's just certainly not going to be easy. It says right here, once again, what we read, the disciples knew what it was for their master, that's Jesus, to take up his cross, Jesus' cross, and they came to experience what it was to endure ignominy, suffering, and death for his, Jesus' dear sake. So see, there was nothing simple about that. They loved everybody, but they also had to put down some hard, stern, harsh facts. Jesus told them, taught them. They walked with him, talked with him, lived with him, watched him die, seen him when he come back to life, watched him ascend into the heavens with the promise he would come back again. And he gave them a job. He gave them a burden to carry. He gave them a journey to carry out, a work to accomplish, and that was to go forth and spread the gospel of the good news of Jesus Christ. Now, the good news is wonderful, and it is good, but it's news, and news is usually when you read something that's news in the newspaper, it's something new. You haven't, oh, wow, what's this? You read about something new that's happening, and maybe in a few days or a week you read something about the same item, but it'll be something new about that item. So it's something new. And that's what Jesus was having these people, the disciples, teach, was the good news, the something new that was happening to all the peoples. And because they were teaching something new that they weren't used to, this caused division in a lot of people. They didn't want to accept it. And Christ made it very clear to us that he came with a sword. That's pretty harsh. But I think we've all experienced in our own probably family lives what it's like to follow Christ and have family members who don't, who do bad things. Against us and towards us, talk bad about us, treat us differently. A lot of times they'll say, "Oh, you think you're better than I am." No, and it's not that we think we're better than I am. We certainly think that we're going to a better place than what they are, and that saddens us and makes us feel horrible. But the reason I believe that they think the way they do a lot of times when they say, "You think you're better than me," is because they're jealous. They see something in your life, in our lives as believers, that they don't have, and it bothers them. And it causes division between the two of you. And that's what Christ is talking about here. And if you don't have division, then you evidently, nothing's being done. This is not a perfect world. And because of that, we know that when we try to teach something that Christ wants us to teach into the world like it is today, it's going to cause some animosities from people. So we have to be able to be willing, as it told us here, that's a really good thing to listen to. And it says the pith of our Lord's paradoxical maxim about losing life to find it is summed up very easily in that little couplet that says, the life of self is death. The death of self is life. So we have to be willing to give our life to live. Now, that maybe sounds crazy to some people. They say, what do you mean give your life to live? If you're dead, you can't be living. But if we're talking about being dead to our ways, our worldly ways, and being alive to Christ. And that's what we have to be willing to do. Give up everything. You have to be willing to give up everything about yourself and about your life and about your world and give it all to Christ and go His way. He may not ask you to give up your house, your car, your job, or anything else, but you have to be willing. You have to be actually, not just say it, you have to actually be willing to give up everything. You actually, as hard as this may seem, you have to be willing to open the door of your house and walk out. If Christ tells you to go and do something, you have to go do it. You have to be, to that point, you have to be willing to give up everything and follow Him. And that's where so many of us fail today. We think that He called the 12 disciples and they dropped everything they were doing, and they, you know, like the old story about, you know, they're going to stone the lady, and He come up and wrote something in the dirt, and they dropped their rocks and split. Well, that's what these guys did. They dropped their rocks and split. They split to follow Him. And by following Him, some of these people gave up a lot. They walked away from their parents, their loved ones, to follow Christ. And that's what He expects us to be willing to do. He may not ask us to do that, but you have to, in your heart and in your mind, He has to know that you are willing to give up everything to follow Him. And in doing so, the reward that He has for you in later, after this life is gone, it far outweighs anything you would ever experience here on this earth. You could be a multimillionaire and have everything you could dream of. Go everywhere you want to go. Do everything you want to do. Be so happy you don't know what to do with yourself. You're so happy. And it's still nothing compared to what Christ is going to be holding for you as a reward in heaven. So think about that. It's get yourself to the point where you're willing to pay the price that Christ wants you to pay. May not tell you have to do it again. Remember that. But you have to be willing. And when these little things pop up and you say, Lord, take me. Pick me, Lord. Whatever you want, pick me. I'm willing to go. I'm willing to do it. He made it clear there will be some deadly opposition between eternally hostile principles. That's a fact. They'll penetrate and render asunder dearest ties. People who love each other so much, but one believes and one doesn't. And there's such an animosity between those two, and that's so sad. But you can't be the one who follows Christ and stop following Christ because you love another person so much you're willing to give up Christ for that person. You can't give up Christ for that person. You can pray for that person. You can do everything imaginable to try to get them to understand, but you can't throw Christ away, or you've thrown everything away. So think about it, pray about it. Remember, it's the parable of swords and foes from Matthew 10:32 through 38. Excellent little parable, and we can learn from it. We can grow from it. We can become better, not only people, we can become better Christians, better stewards, better followers of Christ by studying these things.